And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. We're back here. We're not recording quite as late. We're on a little bit less cold medicine. But you know, when you do this much cross-country travel, you know, you gotta find ways to power through. You know, I'm no Jason Day here. I'm not going to be out here telling you about all my ailments.
Wow.
We're throwing heaters right off the jump.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Now, I like the late night pods are kind of off the rails, kind of unhinged, unfiltered. It was kind of fun. I'm going to miss those over the next few months.
Well, I mean, you know, we're only promising them on Sunday nights, and I do have to I do family dinner with my wife, and I go over to my parents' house every Sunday. So we'll have to record late at some point.
That's true. That's true. Because we're about to hit, and I guess a lot of these California events still end sort of late. Not like the Hawaii, you know, 10 Eastern or 11 Eastern or whatever. But they're still a little bit later than you get with the Florida swing coming up here in about a month.
All right, but for this weekend, we are looking ahead to the Desert Classic. And before we jump into picks and previews, a few items to knock through. Number one, this. We're looking at the Desert Classic for the moment, but what about across the pond? How much of your time is going to be spent tracking the action at Abu Dhabi?
Well, I was looking at the fields for these two events, and it's not even close, Chip. I mean, the Abu Dhabi field is way better than the Desert Classic field. I mean, look, I love Charles Howell. I hope Charles Howell wins the Masters this year, but he's the fourth highest favorite or fourth biggest favorite, I guess, for the Desert Classic. That's not necessarily the strongest field.
No, but it is a comment on how Charles Howell has been playing recently, which is well.
True. That's true. That's fair. But I just think there's a chasm between you got John Rahm and Justin Rose, which it's kind of funny that Justin, two Europeans are the favorites at the Desert Classic, while an American, Dustin Johnson, is one of the favorites at the Abu Dhabi tournament. But I just think with the way the schedules are set up, and I thought this was a really good point. I can't remember where I read it. I think it might have been the New York Times, the crooked New York Times. the way the schedules are set up, this is really one of the, I don't know, two or three biggest events on the European Tour for the first half of the year. It's the only event on the first half of the year that's in the Rolex series. And so I think you see a lot of guys kind of taking advantage of that. And you've got a great field over there. And that's fun. Instead of late night golf, we get early morning golf or really, really late night golf. And I think I'm probably going to pay a little bit more attention to Abu Dhabi than I am to the desert.
In the same way that I was saying the Hawaii swing, you know, even with different varying levels of field strength, that it seems like we come back to, oh, and that's right, you know, remember JT in Hawaii. Or, you know, I think about in the same way that when we're telling storylines later in the year about Tommy Fleetwood, or when we're telling storylines later in the year about different players, oftentimes one of the points that we draw in the calendar year is something that player did at Abu Dhabi. It just feels like over the course of a season, the significance, you know, I just don't have a lot of, And remember back at the Desert Classic? It doesn't feel like the action here rarely, especially compared to Abu Dhabi, ends up carrying significance through the season.
No, you're right, and I think that's probably true of the entire Middle East swing on the European Tour, and we saw that. So this was crazy that this almost happened, but 2016, Danny Willett wins the Dubai event, which I think is next week. It was always following the Abu Dhabi. They've moved some things around, but I'm pretty sure that's next week again. And then he goes on to win the Masters. 2017, Sergio wins the Dubai Desert Classic, goes on to win the Masters. And then 2018, Rory probably should have won the Dubai Desert Classic. Hao Tong Li bucked his head at the end. And then almost won the Masters. So we almost got three straight years of guys winning the Dubai Desert Classic and then going on to win the Masters. So there was some real symmetry there. But yeah, Tommy Fleetwood going for three in a row in Abu Dhabi, that's fun. Koepka and DJ are both over there. Stenson, it's a really good field and a really exciting start to the 2019 calendar year. The season's already started, but the calendar year has not started for the European Tour yet.
Interesting. A few more headlines. The Augusta National Women's Amateur is a yet another step towards inclusiveness within the Augusta National community. These things come bit by bit, and to be able to host an amateur championship on the women's side is a step forward. Is that something that, you know, when you're tracking, you know, the different culture shifts within golf, how significant does that feel to you?
Oh, I think it's huge. I think it's progressive. I mean, I think it's getting out ahead of everything. Mostly because Augusta National, it feels like a big deal. And so one of the headlines this week is that invites went out to all these amateurs, and they're, you know, posting videos of themselves opening the invitation.
It's a very elegant invitation. I saw a lot of the social media. Yeah, I mean, it looks absolutely exquisite.
Yeah, it's great. And I think that it's funny to watch these women open their invitations, because the reaction is the same as the men who get them, like the PGA tour guys that get the invites. They're just it's the fulfillment of what for them has been a shorter lifelong dream, but it's still a lifelong dream that the guys who get into the Masters get. I was thinking about this, though. It's a 54 hole event, and the first 36 are played at Champions Retreat, which is actually where it hosts this post Masters media event. It's not like the greatest course in the world. It's fun. We've had fun out there, but then all of a sudden the field gets cut from 72 to 30, and you go and play Augusta for the last 18 holes. But I'm not positive about this, but I don't think getting in the field necessarily means that you get to play even a practice round at Augusta. I think you have to make that top 30. So there's 42 women who are going to be in this, but definitely won't get to play a competitive round at Augusta, and might not even get to play at all. But just to be invited and to get into that, it's I'm excited about it. I think that final round at Augusta with all these women amateurs playing, I feel like I'm gonna be into it. I'm really fired up about that later on this year.
How after we got off the podcast, did you spend much time ruminating on your beliefs of what Matt Kuchar might be in 2019? I feel like I'm seeing you really hone in on, like, you spent the last couple of days thinking a lot about Matt Kuchar and his misquoted Jay-Z lyrics.
Well, not necessarily. I had a long conversation, not a long conversation. I had a conversation with my wife about the tipping thing, which went down some interesting paths. But in terms of his play on the course, it really feels like, remember that Jimmy Walker year five years ago where he won a bunch of times.
Yeah. 2014.
He won in the, I think it was 15 maybe. And he won in the fall, and then he won the Sony, and then he goes on maybe a year later to win the PGA Championship. It's sort of, now I think Kuchar's obviously he's a better career player than Jimmy Walker, but it does sort of feel like there's still, like, Kuchar's play over the last 2 months has been a reminder that he could still win a major, you know? And he's not, like, he's playing really good golf, and so I think that's the question that I have in my head is he still at a point in his career where he can, and this is a question I have about all of these guys who are getting a little bit older. Like, can Henrik Stenson legitimately still win a major championship? I think so, but I'm not positive. Like, he's getting to the age where you have to start asking that question. And I think Kuchar's getting there too. And the answer over the last 2 months has been, yeah, he can. I don't know which one. I don't know, where it's going to be at. But I think that's going to be pretty interesting to follow with him as this season kind of unfolds.
I think it is more likely that Matt Kuchar wins two more times this season at regular events than it is that he wins a major.
I think that's fair.
That's Kuchar versus the field, where like Kuchar value above replacement golfer is incredible, but distance between him and the elite is such that when you get, you know, dozens of those players, to imagine that Matt Kuchar at this point in his career is going to be able to go toe for toe through an exhausting 18 to 36 rounds. I mean, like, if we're going to talk about Ricky Fowler and last year's Masters, then you also have to include Matt Kuchar and the Open Championship, right? Like, if Jordan Spieth doesn't just absolutely black out, go get that, like, hitting bizarre shots from all over the place, you know, was it the Titleist or the Callaway truck? I forgot what
it was. The Titleist.
Of course, for Jordan, it was the Titleist. But, like, if Jordan Spieth does not, if he has to, for some reason, get sick or is not in the Open Championship, then we're talking about Matt Kuchar, the, you know, major championship winner. So, yeah, I definitely think that he could win another major before the end of his career. But at the same time, going back to your theory of the, you only get but so many opportunities, I kind of feel like that was one of his opportunities.
Yeah, I get that feeling too, that it was, we're going to look back on Kuchar's career and he's going to have 10 wins or whatever, and we're going to remember him as a really consistent. He's sort of, in a lot of ways, he's like a better version of Charles Howell, kind of, where he's super consistent for a long time and wins some non-majors. I guess he did win a Players Championship, so that's big time. Apparently, it's, you know, I've been told over the first two tournaments of 2019 that it's one of the five most important events. Have you noticed that every graphic that Golf Channel has shown has included the Players Championship with the four majors in terms of where guys have finished? Like if they show like where Gary Woodland finished for 2018 at the majors, they include the players in there.
I respect it.
Anyway,
wait, hold on, because CBS has the Masters, CBS has the PGA Championship, and then for the Open, we're at
NBC Golf Channel.
NBC Golf Channel, and then US Open is Fox. Yeah, I mean, if you're NBC, you just gotta, you know, it ain't tricking if you got it. Stunt, like, throw, like, show off what you have. This, if there's even a whiff that people are talking about the players like the fifth major, then yes, I am absolutely including including the Players Championship, because that's the kind of you're very astute to pick up on it, but that definitely is the kind of subtle decision that's made in a meeting on a Tuesday that ends up actually carrying some significance, because it's just, no, in all of our graphics packages, if we're talking about the majors, include Players Championship. Everybody at the table says yes, but then for the entire season, all of a sudden, you're looking at one of your, as Golf Channel NBC goes, you're looking at one of your premier events, and now maybe on some subconscious level, it's leveled up.
Well, and there's been some talk. I know Brendan Porath and Andy Johnson have talked about this a lot, but how much is the PGA Tour involved in that and in pushing that? Because obviously that's their, you know, crown jewel event. Like that's their event, that, because they don't, I don't know. It's golf is so weird in that they don't really have a hand in the four majors. And so they want their, you know, going back to the five families, they want their premier event to have a seat at the table. And it's just, I don't know. It's pretty interesting. But
if they start including tour championship finishes, then I'll tip the table over.
What do you mean?
If they start, like, if you throwing in the players, I'm cool with that. That's a, like, you know, iconic course, and it is, you know, one of the major, like, truly special sort of points within the golf season. If you start including tour championship 30 player no cut field finishes, I will tip this table over and start throwing things.
With staggered starting scores to par.
Oh yeah, with the new gimmicky scoring system. Yeah, no, don't. As long as if they do that, then you've gone too far. Mark Richt has lost control of the NBC graphics department.
But no, I think we'll probably look back on Kuchar as a really consistent golfer for a long time who had, one and a half real shots at a major and didn't take advantage. And that's, barring something extraordinary from him over the next two or three years, that's probably what it'll be. And, that's a great career. Like we get so wound up and caught up about majors and, historically great. And it's like Matt Kuchar's made like $50 million and almost won a major and won, 9 or 10 times on the PGA Tour. That's unbelievable success at the highest level for a long time. And it should be applauded.
Well, speaking of Jordan Spieth, we'll be digging into him and our expert picks from the Desert Classic right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Kyle, I am concerned that your overreaction guns are a little bit hot right now.
Okay.
I am not ready to panic about Jordan Spieth.
Okay.
I think that I think that you have too much. I think that you've got too much big picture proof that he is, as you've said many times, a generational talent and a generational golfer, and I think that within the context of his very, very still brief career as a professional, I think that we need to have sustained struggles before I'm ready to start asking what's really wrong with Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, the trajectory is not great, though, right? He's 18th in the world now. The lowest he's been since, I think, December 2013. And look, I'm less concerned, honestly. I wrote about this on Monday. I'm less concerned about what his scores are or what his strokes gained are or if he's missing cuts or whatever. I'm not worked up about that. And we talked about this a little bit on Sunday. I'm more concerned about the things that he's saying and the things that he's thinking about, because he's taken us to some kind of, he doesn't seem to be in a great place mentally. And so that's the part that it's like, okay, could this get even more sideways? I don't know.
It would not surprise me at all for Jordan Spieth to be going through a brooding teenage years right now.
I'm going to read you. So I posted six quotes. I'm going to read you a couple of them from the Sony Open last week.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. The first one is, where are we at? I have a lesser amount of certainty than I've had in a while. It doesn't bother me right now. I don't feel anxious, like I have to do anything. I feel pretty patient with what's coming because I know I'm working on the right things. It took me a while to figure out what that was. It took me a while to figure out what to work on.
I am willing to entertain that this old soul might be emotionally Benjamin Buttoning in front of our eyes. If he was so calm and cool and collected and at one in peace with the game of golf as a 21-year-old, well, he's got to go through some of those brooding teenage years right now. He needs to buy some records, some emo records, and pick up an acoustic guitar and just go hang out in his bedroom for a while. And I understand that personally, Jordan Spieth getting married, going through a bunch of life changes, But like, given the way that he has talked about the game, even when he's playing well, and like we've told jokes about, you know, his conversations and his talking, like if his game starts going sideways, I think is absolutely if not acceptable, maybe even predictable, that he's going to have some wild quotes trying to describe the darkness that's in his head right now.
Yeah. So the next quote was, I almost took ignorance as bliss in a lot of parts of my game. I did things well, but I didn't know why. I just did them. Then they got off, and so I had to figure out why I did them well and how to train it back. Sounds like there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. You don't... So like, what's... From covering the game of golf, Jordan Spieth is not the first player to get in his own head about his game. It's probably 100% of the PGA Tour, right?
Right. Yeah.
So what makes him different in terms of your level of alarm?
Because I think one of the things that's coloring this actually for me is the fact that I've seen Rory get in his own head recently, and he hasn't quite gotten it back, and so I think there's just a small level of caution for me with these guys at the highest level, to where it's like, oh, Rory will be fine. Rory will be fine. And it's like, really? I mean, maybe, and maybe it's still coming, but I don't know. And so I sort of feel the same. Look, I'm still like all the way in on Spieth. I'm still purchasing stock even as I'm reading these quotes. But I do feel like there was just a little bit of, there's a few yellow flags coming out of Hawaii.
Is he going to be
unrelated?
What?
Unrelated to any, missile threats this year, thankfully.
Yeah. No false, iPhone alerts sent out this year.
Though, I'll read you the last one. I went through like a couple different swings today. I mean, it was kind of a test, I guess. It's very unusual. I don't feel like I've been in this situation before. It's okay. I felt like I was patient out there and still am right now. Like I said, it could take a while, but I got pretty far off and I'm trying to backtrack significantly. But I need to get some tournament rounds to do it, even though it's humbling at the same. I mean, that's somebody who is lost saying those words. Now, is he going to be lost forever? I don't think so. I think he's still going to win I think he's going to win multiple times this year, but he is lost right now, it seems like it, based on what I'm reading.
Jordan Spieth wins. You've already said multiples, so I've got to set it a little bit higher. Jordan Spieth wins the rest of this calendar year 2.5.
Under.
Under.
I predicted 3 at the beginning of the year, and I don't know. I don't feel like I can stick with that. I thought he would be more ready to roll at the beginning of the year than he is.
He is talking. Well, go ahead.
He's playing Farmers next week. Did you see that?
I did not.
He's playing Farmers. Rory's playing Farmers.
And Tiger. That's fun.
Yeah. I mean, I just got an email about Rory. So it's Xander, Tiger, Rory, Spieth. Who else is in here? Justin Rose is in it. John Rahm, Finau, Fowler, Mark Leishman, Jason Day, Woodland, Matsuyama, Cantlay. It's loaded.
Sick.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So, from a tournament that has all of us on pins and needles waiting to see what happens, to the Desert Classic, where, as you mentioned, John Rahm will be there. John Rahm, Justin Rose, Patrick Cantlay, Charles Howell, as you mentioned before, Andrew Putnam, who we saw contend last week with Matt Kuchar all the way down the stretch. What storyline are you following going into this tournament?
Well, I'm going obscure here because it's, like I said, it's not a great field. There are some interesting stories. You've got Bud Cauley, who had a good fall coming back from injury at the Memorial last year. You've got, obviously, Charles Howell trying to get his second win of the season. You've got Cantlay, who's been kind of quietly playing really good golf over the last year or so. But there's a guy in the field. He's an amateur, Charlie Ryder. I think I'm saying his last name correctly. He's a freshman at USC. And I think this was a guy that I had somebody text me about him either last year or a couple of years ago. He was an amateur. He got an invite into this tournament last year. And the person who texted me was there watching him. And he's like, this guy's swing speed is off the charts. And there was a quote from John Rahm last year who said, this guy is easily longer than me. Like, it's not even close.
Wow.
And John Rahm was 16th on the PGA Tour in driving distance last year. He averaged 309 off the tee. And he said that there was no chance of him keeping up with this kid. And he missed a cut last year, but he's in the field again. I'm pretty excited to see what he does after a year of going through it. He's in college now. You know, can he hang a little bit? Can he make a little noise? I think that'll be pretty intriguing.
Where's he playing for college?
He's at SC.
Ooh.
Yeah.
John Rahm won this event last year. What are you expecting from the big butt Spaniard as he really steps into the limelight here?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the chasm between him and Rose at the top and everybody else in the field is so wide. I mean, I just think they're far and away the best players in the field. And he's had, I think, four top tens worldwide in his last five starts, something like that, including that Hero World Challenge win. I think if him or Rose finishes outside the top 10, it would be maybe not a disappointment, but a little bit of a, I don't know. I would expect them to finish in the top 10. That's how good they're both of them are playing. And that's how kind of mediocre this field is.
Phil Mickelson is in the field. Is this his first action since the match?
Yeah. On the course and in the casino as well, probably.
That's not true. How many events is Lefty going to play this year? 13? 12?
No, he'll play more than that. 18? I don't know.
Okay. If Phil Mickelson plays 18 events, do you think that he will make the cut at... All right, first, I've got two of them. Make the cut over under 12 and a half.
I'll go under. Wow. I think we're in for an eye-opening lefty year. I think this could be the year that everybody's like, oh, Phil Mickelson's 49? I thought he was like 42.
Because he just keeps running out of steam?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 18 events. Phil Mickelson, top 20 finishes. Over under... 3.5.
I'll go over.
Okay.
It's a good number. Here's the thing. I think I wrote this, or we might have talked about it. I think his ceiling is still pretty high. Like, I think he can still win an event. I really do. I mean, he did so like 10 months ago. But I think his floor is getting lower. And so this dichotomy that we've seen over the course of his career, where he's kind of all over the place, like he'll win one week and then he'll shoot like a 79 the next week. I think we're going to see more and more of that. And I think both the ceiling and the floor are just going to start to get lower over the next five or six years.
So do you think he will win an event this year? 0.5 wins this season?
No.
Yeah. I don't.
I mean, he's a year away from being eligible for the Champions Tour.
And buddy, he is going to be coming for Bernard Langer's throat pretty soon.
I mean, it's crazy. I feel like we view him or we treat him as if he's 43 or 41.
Because he acts like a big kid.
I know.
You are the way you feel. You are the way you act. He does everything to make us think that he's younger, and it is only now probably going to, like, work the other way where, you know, Father Time is undefeated and his game's going to start suffering because of it. And we're probably going to overreact to his struggles because throughout his career, he's made us think that he's younger than he is.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I mean, I hope he wins the U.S. Open this year. How good would that be at Pebble?
Oh, it'd be incredible.
Would I have anything to write about out there?
Do you think so? I mean, have you already started to map out your storylines for each of the majors?
Not yet. In all seriousness, no. I will start my... in fact, I probably should have already started my ranking the Masters field 1 to 90 or however many are in it. I'll start that in the next couple weeks.
I mean, it's because it's a 5,000-word manifesto.
Yeah. What should I do? What should I do with Spieth? Where do I put him? He's never finished lower than 11th. He's got 4 top 3 finishes there.
You cannot. He's where in the world right now? 16?
18.
18? Yeah, you can't put him lower than 15.
I mean, I'm going to have him in the top 5 probably.
Okay. All right.
I think that I know I'm more all over the place than he is mentally with him. But I think that there is something. I think there's something about being there that just shuts his mind off and just allows him to play golf. And I don't know if it's lack of distraction, lack of, it's a very different experience for those guys in that week. There's nobody inside the ropes. There's not as much media in terms of guys trying to pull you aside. It's much more about the golf, and I think that's good for him in a lot of ways.
I didn't know there was no inside the ropes. So when you're following, you're doing the like chase, run a shot ahead.
I was on top of Porras' shoulders whenever Spieth made the putt on six. No, I wasn't. But that would have been amazing.
On top of Porras is what, 6'2", 6'3"? I've never met him in person, just judging by television.
He's taller than me, yeah.
Yeah. How tall are you?
I'm like 6 foot.
All right. Nice. All right, pick to win at the Desert Classic.
I got Rose. It was just a toss up between him and John Rahm. I got Charles Howell as my top 10, and then I got Bud Cauley as my sleeper. Bud Cauley's 80-1. He made all 3 cuts he made 3 of 4 cuts in the fall. Finished 10th top 10 in one of those events, and he's got a lot of talent. It's just a matter of staying healthy, and being consistent for a long period of time. So I'm interested to see how he does this week.
All right. We will be back with you on Sunday to recap all the action, both overseas and out at the Desert Classic. You can follow him on Twitter @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.